You know, sometimes the world doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, except on the basketball court.
This is the show for the real hoopers. It's The Right Call with Zay Collier. Now, the man who's official with or without the whistle, Isaiah Collier.
Man, it's been a long time. It feels so good to do that, dog. This is the bubble edition of The Right Call with Zay Collier. We are back, finally. Unprecedented times, but we are back, my friends, ladies and gents. The Right Call NBA Sports is back during the COVID-19 pandemic. This is different, but we got sports back, we got hoops back, and your boy is back. We got some big news coming. But, you know, I'm not going to say it yet, but some big news, some big moves going to be made. Very excited about that. But your boy is back. NBA season. We're breaking down our predictions. I'm breaking down my predictions on the bubble, what I think of it, who I think is going to succeed, the players who I think are going to take over. And, yeah, man, we're just going to get it cracking. See, I'm a little rusty, but that's all right. I'm glad to have sports back, and we got it cracking. So, if you have been living in a box, the NBA, they have gotten back onto the court. They are in a bubble in Orlando, Florida, where only the top 22 teams that the NBA chose, which was based on the end of the season, based off if you were basically playoff eligible, with 8 games left. I don't know if that's exactly right, but the NBA went and chose 13 teams out of the West and 9 teams out of the East, and all of those teams are in a 22, you know, tournament team bubble in Orlando where everybody is quarantining. They've done a great job. We haven't had any positives except for, you know, Michael Beasley, who got sent back. I feel bad for him because he's just trying to get back in the league and the Nets aren't going to pick him back up. So, but anyway, don't be like Lou Will. Let's get that out the way. Don't be like Lou Will. If you're going to leave the bubble, don't get in trouble. I know those wings are fire at Magic City. We ain't going to get into it. Lou Will, you're my dog. I ain't going to talk about you, but, you know, you messed up. But I think this might work to the Clippers' advantage in the long run. It might work to the Clippers' advantage, especially for opening night when they're playing against the Lakers. Clippers aren't going to have Patrick Beverley. They're not going to have Montrezl Harrell, but they're going to have Kawhi and Paul George. And if you're coming from Doc's perspective, I mean, how is that not good strategy? You're probably going to play the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals if, you know, it happens where the NBA wants it to happen. But if that happens, you don't want to put all of your pieces, all of your chips on the table just yet. So now, if you're Frank Vogel and Jason Kidd and LeBron and the whole Lakers organization, Anthony Davis, he got punched in the eye during one of the scrimmage preseason exhibition games. I would not play him. I wouldn't play him opening night just because, you know, that's how you play chess. It's different. Like, we've never seen anything like it. Alvin Gentry just went out and said, hey, this is the biggest, most exciting AAU tournament that we're ever going to see. And I 100% agree with that. Like, these guys are going back to their roots. If you think about AAU basketball, which I remember playing as a kid, I remember going to AAU Nationals in Orlando, Florida, at the Disney Worldwide of Sports, where the NBA bubble is. It's a astonishing complex. Like, they have multiple fields. I know that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have done their training camps there. Like, it is absolutely beautiful, and there's more than enough distancing to where you could be comfortable. And you know how the NBA players, they were bitching about their food and whatnot. Like, that's not a thing anymore. We don't see that. But you could be comfortable. You have resources to do things. And you get to hoop, which that's the main priority. We get to hoop in a safe environment. It's not like Major League Baseball to where a whole team caught the virus. It's not like football to where we have to worry about 55, 50-something players and, you know, even more on the staff. Like, you have your 35 staff members there, and if your team goes far enough, then it could be jumped up. So that's what we're looking at right now. You know, there's certain players, there's certain teams that are going to excel in this bubble that probably wouldn't excel in a normal playoff format. And you have to take account with no fans. And people are like, oh, God, why wouldn't fans, you know, be a problem? You got to play at the end of the day. Look, if you're on the free throw line and there's 2 seconds left, you're down by one. Just ask, or not even down, just ask George Hill in the 2018 finals with the J.R. Smith finanza or whatever that what happened with that. You got J.R. Smith, and he's the one that people say blew it. But people don't talk about the missed free throw that George Hill missed before that. But Oracle Arena is known as probably the greatest home court advantage arena in NBA history. And yes, the Warriors were unbelievable. Like, they were ridiculous, you know, during their run of KD, Steph. I still think the Warriors are going to be good in the 2021 season. But if you know the NBA, you know that in Oakland, Oracle Arena is that place where it's so hard to play. Now you come into the bubble, there's no fans. So you're not going to have those distractions, you know, the same eighth seeds. Like, you remember when the Mavericks lost to the We Believe Warriors in 2007 when Dirk won his MVP. The same after the year that the Mavericks went to the finals. That team was supposed to go to the finals again, but they got upsetted. Why? Because that Warriors team was a bad matchup. But another big reason was a part of the fact that Oracle Arena is a very difficult place to play. So now when you have an AFC versus a one seed, you don't have that. So will we see more upsets? Probably, but when it comes down to the nitty-gritty of basketball, we should see more of that, you know, be played out instead of the fans being taken into account. Another thing, you got to look at it on the other end. You know, the first thing I thought about when LeBron said, when we first went into COVID, when we thought about the bubble was just like on the table. It wasn't really put into place yet because obviously we didn't know what was going on with COVID. But LeBron went out and said straight up, I can't play with no fans. Like, I won't do it. Obviously, that's bullcorn because LeBron James is trying to get his fourth ring in Orlando, Florida as we speak. But a lot of the guys look at that as, hey, I need the fans. Like, the fans are what gets me going, you know? Like, KD used to love killing opponents, going to other being the away team and going to another arena and shutting up the opponents. Some guys might use that as ammo. I don't know. You know, you have to take everything into account because we've never seen it before, so again, I don't know what guys are going to use as their motivation. Again, we got a lot of stuff going on back home. A lot of these guys, all these guys, I'm sorry, are away from their families. So are they thinking about what's going on? You know, like, COVID's still going on. Even though you're in a bubble, COVID's still going on. These same racial injustice problems are still going on, which the NBA has done a really great job with, you know, the Black Lives Matter on the court and allowing the players to, you know, put some type of positive message on the back of their jersey instead of their name. But still, all of those things are going on and they're very distracting. So who knows which players are going to use that distraction and use it as a positive or it could be a negative. You will never know, but it's fun to talk about. You know what I'm saying? So, getting to the bubble. Predictions. You know, I just talked about and touched on different scenarios and whatnot. But when it comes down to it, the eight teams in the West, they'll probably make it to the playoffs. I'm just keeping it real. Now, if I let's go all the way to the eighth seed and the ninth seed and so on in the West, because that's going to be the most appealing. Seeing what Portland's going to do, seeing what the Pelicans are going to do. Now, with New Orleans, it's very interesting because if you look at the percentage of their schedule and the teams that they're playing, you know, the difficulty of the schedule, they have the easiest schedule. They do. I mean, Zion Williamson, when LeBron leaves the game, even though Giannis is the best player in the league, I think when LeBron leaves the game, I think the NBA kind of wants to give the keys to Zion instead of Giannis. That's just me. It just really feels that way. Like, he's only 19 years old. He's so exciting and athletic and superior. Like, why not? So the NBA, it's starting now. Like, the Zion, you know, train and his publicity, it is starting now. You got to thank people like Michael Jordan for that shit. So here we go. We got the Pelicans, who are, again, 3.5 games back from the Grizzlies. You got 8 games until the playoffs start. So basically, the Pelicans, you would want to win at least 6, at least. If you lose 2 or if you lose 3, then I think you're in trouble. Now, Portland is terrifying. Portland is terrifying. And if I would pick any team to make that run. Now, again, just go back to the rules. The rules are different. If you make it to, you know, the playoffs as a ninth seed, which, again, you can due to the bubble rules, at the conclusion of the seeding games, if the eighth seed is 4 games or fewer ahead of the ninth seed, those teams will compete in the play-in tournament to determine the eighth playoff seed. Playoffs and finals will proceed in a traditional conference-based format. So it could be a series within itself if those teams are close enough, which I think the Trailblazers will be, especially if you get Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins back, which are huge attributes to your team. Like, again, it'll take those guys a while to get acclimated. It will take Dame and CJ and Melo, all those guys time to get acclimated with Zach Collins and Nurkic coming back, because they played, you know, basically 60 games without them. So it'll take some time, and it'll take time for those guys to get their feet wet. Like, both of them looked pretty good. Well, I saw, you know, Yusuf Nurkic play. I didn't really see Zach Collins as much, but Yusuf Nurkic looks like a go. Obviously, he'll probably be on a minutes restriction, but you can't tell me, if I was the Lakers with no Avery Bradley due to COVID complications — he doesn't have COVID, but he doesn't want to risk anything because of his son, which, you know, I give applause to him. That's a man decision right there. But you have no Avery Bradley. You have no Rondo for at least like a month or two because he got injured in the bubble. So you're basically relying on Alex Caruso, Quinn Cook, and Danny Green and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Those guys are tough, but Portland, Dame, CJ, like, they're arguably the two best guards, you know, for a tandem in the league. Two best, you know, 1-2 punch as a point guard, shooting guard combo in the league. If there's others, let me know. But Dame and CJ are definitely at the top or top tier at those positions. So if I was the Lakers, I wouldn't want that at all. I wouldn't. I would want a young Memphis team where their best player is a rookie who is tough as shit. He's going to get rookie of the year, but at the end of the day, he's a rookie. He's no Dame Lillard, 5-time All-Star, you know, 4-time All-NBA player type guy. Like, that's completely different. Completely different. But the Lakers, they want to see the Grizzlies. If they see the Grizzlies, then that could save and conserve LeBron's energy, which, at 35, that's a huge priority with that organization. So I'm with it. I mean, I like it. I like that, you know, if the four games are fewer ahead of the ninth seed, then the team will compete in the play-in tournament. Like, that's fire. Like, NBA, y'all did that. Adam Silver, kudos to you, my guy, because that's a great idea. And I don't know about y'all, I would rather see Portland play the Lakers. Like, that's a seven-game series. Even if you don't think it is, and obviously LeBron could easily make it a sweep, but Dame Lillard could go off for 40 any game. And when you have guys that you're going to have to play Caruso, you're going to have to play Quinn Cook. Like, they're going to play at least over 15 minutes a game. Everybody thinks, oh, Alex Caruso is tough. Alex Caruso is this and that. Yo, y'all need to slow the hell down on Alex Caruso, dog. Let me tell y'all what Alex Caruso reminds me of. Alex Caruso is literally the 2020 version of Jeremy Lin. He's the 2020 version of Jeremy Lin. He's on the most popular team in the league. And yes, he's a good NBA basketball player. He's an NBA player. But again, like, Alex Caruso isn't your third option. Like, if you look at, if you think about anybody that's been watching the NBA and has been watching the LA Lakers this year and, you know, thinks about their publicity, it goes like this. It goes LeBron, Anthony Davis, then Alex Caruso. Yo, like, I'm not even fronting. Like, I'm keeping it 100 with y'all. I'm keeping it a buck, a thousand, a million, whatever number you want to keep it, to keep it all the way real. Alex Caruso is more like Jeremy Lin than, you know, he is. I don't know. He's like, even Matthew Dellavedova. Like, y'all remember how much publicity he was getting with playing with LeBron? Is this another part of the LeBron effect? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Like, I'm not going to say Caruso's a mediocre player. I don't like saying mediocre players for any NBA players. Like, the NBA is ridiculous in talent. And the fact that you make it, like, I know cats that are overseas right now making six figures that are dogs, but, you know, can't get into the league just because, I don't know, there's a lot of politics in it, and it's probably not best for them. But if you're in the league, you're an elite basketball player within itself, but there are levels to that elite status. And in the NBA, you know, there's the elite of the NBA, the LeBrons, the Giannis, the Kawhis, the James Hardens, et cetera, Steph Curry. But then there's the guys who are the role players. And sometimes there are some role players that are just, that just get more publicity than others. Like, and it depends on the team that they're on. It depends on the market that they're in, i.e. Jeremy Lin, New York Knicks. You're telling me if Jeremy Lin was on the San Antonio Spurs, he would have got that publicity? Hell to no. So same thing with Dellavedova. Dellavedova was on LeBron's team. LeBron had the most, you know, nationally televised games out of any superstar in the league. So, of course, you could fall in love with certain players on that team, especially if you respect their game. Like, you might not be the most talented or best player out there, but if you're contributing on a LeBron James team, which, again, I've talked about in many podcasts before, playing with LeBron is a different type of pressure that nobody has ever faced, you know, as a teammate playing with a superstar. We just watched The Last Dance with Michael Jordan and all those guys, you know, Steve Kerr and Pippen and Bill Willington and all those guys. They talked about how hard it was to play with Mike because Mike's expectations were just so extreme and his will to win was just, you know, beyond others. But they didn't have social media back then. There was nobody to compare Mike to. It was like I remember watching 1991 highlights with Jordan, and they were already giving him like the greatest. He was the greatest player ever. He didn't even win a ring yet. They were like, this guy's the best player we've ever seen of all time. So Mike's expectations, they weren't like LeBron. So being a teammate of LeBron, the pressure's tough. So I give that to Caruso. Like, that's tough. But for him to be what he is, for people to think that, he's the next option. Like, everybody knows it should be Kyle Kuzma. Kyle Kuzma, he should be where Alex Caruso is. And that's probably really painful for him, but Kyle Kuzma is the X factor for that team. Like, if Kyle Kuzma plays well, this team shouldn't be beat. If he could play well consistently, this team shouldn't be beat. Because, again, when we go to that Clippers matchup, you know, when you go to the matchup with the Nuggets or whatnot, and, you know, Anthony Davis and LeBron might be off that game, you need a third guy in the playoffs. Why do you think the Spurs were always so good? Because they always had a third guy. Why do you think big threes are always such a big deal in the NBA? Because it's very common that two players could get taken out of the game, but all you need is one to step up. That's why I think Lou Williams is so detrimental to the Clippers. Like, the fact what Lou Williams can do for that team separates them from everybody else. What Montrezl Harrell can do for that team, the Clippers, separates them from everybody else. Because have you ever seen two guys averaging almost 20 points off the bench? Off the bench, dog? Like, that's unheard of, man. That's just unheard of. So, if I were the Lakers, if LeBron doesn't go in full playoff mode to what we saw in 2018, which obviously there's a huge possibility that could happen, but that was 2 years ago. You know, like every car you drive, you don't have the same mileage on that same car from 2 years ago. LeBron has more miles on him. He had that groin injury in 2019. So, like, you have to take that into account. So, going to the East, the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, if this was before COVID, I don't think I would have the Bucks winning. I don't. I think that the longevity of the season, I think they might have burnt out. But now, in this bubble scenario, and looking at, you know, the Magic, like, the Magic are going to make it, and the Bucks are 6 games ahead of the second seed Raptors, so they don't have anything to worry about. In a way, which I don't know if we'll see teams do this, load management in the fucking bubble, which would be ridiculous, but like I said tonight, if I'm the Lakers, or, you know, if I'm the Lakers in opening night and I got Anthony Davis and I'm looking at the other team and they're not playing 3 of their top players, Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams for them damn wings, then I'm not going to play Anthony Davis. Like, you got to play chess out here. I'm not going to put all of my chips on the table and let Doc Rivers and those guys see my team. And it's just for, you know, your morale. Like, if I beat that team and I'm the Lakers, then everybody's just going to be like, oh, they didn't have those 3 guys, you know? And if you lose and you play AD and LeBron, then that's really going to hurt your team's morale, because now it's going to be, oh, damn, we can't even beat them with those guys. So we got real problems when they come back. And again, the NBA is all about matchups. The playoffs are all about matchups. That's why it's going to be real different with this bubble situation, because matchups, you know, a lot of matchups depend on environment. Like I said, with those Warriors teams that won it and the team that beat the Mavericks back in 07, like, a lot of matchups have to do with environment and what we've seen in the past and how, you know, some teams might get upsetted because their fans were just rowdy and that team that they were playing against, like, it might have been just hard to play in that arena. Like, it was just hard for the psyche of that team to play in that arena. So now you come in the bubble and it's different. Like, what's going to be that thing? You know, like, what's going to make a team like the Sixers, who are the 6th seed at the moment, which I think they're going to move up to the 5th seed, because maybe even the 4th. Like, it depends on how Miami plays, because that Philly team is scary as hell. And I like what Mike Brown's doing, putting Ben Simmons at the 4 spot, especially during their half-court sets, because I think that's kind of Ben Simmons' knock. Like, his half-court game is limited due to his shot, which he's been kind of given the green light some more to shoot that thing. I don't know. Will we see some Ben Simmons threes? Maybe. But why couldn't the Sixers move up past the Pacers, who just lost Sabonis due to plantar fasciitis? Like, you know, so, because, again, Sabonis, if you don't have a healthy Victor Oladipo, he's their best player. He's easily their best player. And Victor Oladipo, he's just now getting his wings back. Like, he's just now really getting his legs back, and he wasn't even going to play until he realized he wasn't getting that guala. Like, he wasn't going to pay until he realized he was getting paid. So now that, you know, he's in there, that gives them a better shot. But, man, no Sabonis, that really hurts the Pacers. And, you know, if you're that sixth seed and you're Philly, you're probably chomping at the bits to move up because you're not trying to play Boston in the first round. Now, that would be a decent matchup. Like, you have a guy in Al Horford on the Sixers who played in Boston, so he kind of knows what goes on and kind of knows what, you know, personnel on the Celtics and what Brad Stevens likes to do strategy-wise. So, you know, look at that as something, because if we started the bubble playoffs today, you would see a 3-6 Boston Celtics, Philadelphia 76ers matchup. Now, on the Celtics side, they're scary as hell. They're the only team besides the Bucks I could see making it out into the finals. And that's just because they got three guys. Like I said, that three is huge. When you have three guys who could take over a game, they got Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker. Offensively, three guys that could get their own shot off, can't really be stopped, and are hungry. All three of those guys are hungry because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they're trying to prove that, hey, Kyrie wasn't the reason, you know, Kyrie is the reason why we were, you know, we weren't as good last year, but now that we're on our own and we have something to prove. We have something to prove. Then you got Kemba, who's played in Charlotte his whole life. Like, he doesn't even know what playoff basketball really is. So now he's going to be put in that situation to where he's playing meaningful games. Kemba has a chip on his shoulder. And you got a guy from New York, like, grew up in Harlem. Like, you telling me he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder already? Yeah, man. Celtics are scary. I think Celtics and Milwaukee, they're going to come out as the Eastern Conference Finals matchup. I really do. Now, everybody's probably like, what about Toronto? Which I feel like I'm on everybody else's bandwagon to where I'm sleeping on them. And it's tough. It's tough. They're a really good regular season team. And I think that's just because they match up well with everybody in the league. But when it comes to a seven-game series and you're looking at Pascal Siakam, he's their best player. And, yes, Kyle Lowry's good, but Kawhi separated them last year. Like, I'm sorry. Kawhi is a top-five player in the league. Kawhi is going to be one of the greatest players to ever play the game when it's all said and done. So I think he's kind of a big deal. And when you lose him, I still need to be proven. Like, yes, Toronto's probably going to beat they're definitely going to beat the Nets. Well, or the Magic in the first round. Obviously, the Magic, they're a half game back of the Nets, so they're probably going to move up. But keeping it real, if the Nets, they have no chance. But the Magic, if the Magic win against the Raptors, I don't know. Like, Jonathan Isaac back, who is one of my favorite players in the league because I think he has insane upside. Like, he might be only 23 years old. I feel like Jonathan Isaac's been in the league for 5 years. But he was hurt or whatever. Now he's back. I don't know what his restrictions are, but Jonathan Isaac is one of the best defenders in the league before he got injured, and he's 6'11", really versatile. You know, they got Vujovic, still tough. Markelle Fultz was the former number one pick. He's underrated. VJ Augustine's one of the best backup point guards in the league. Evan Fournier is no slouch. Terrence Ross could shoot. Like, the Magic, don't sleep on the Magic, you know, for anything. Aaron Gordon has tremendous upside. Like, he's a lot better than what people think. Nobody just watches Orlando. And, you know, they technically have the home court advantage, if you think about it. Like, their jersey says Disney, even though, you know, they're playing at Disney. So that's quite ironic. As for the Miami Heat, I don't know. The Heat are interesting. Like, they're kind of – they're deep. I like the Andre Iguodala, you know, trade or getting him from the Grizzlies this year. But after the second – after the first round, it's kind of – they're just going to be playing spoiler. Like, I think Jimmy Butler is obviously a really good player, but I just can't see Miami beating Boston or Milwaukee in a 7-game series. I can see them beating Toronto, but I don't think that will be a matchup that we'll see. As far as the Washington Warriors, hey, y'all get to play basketball and get paid for it. So look at it that way. No Bradley Beal. Why are y'all there? So that's just how I feel about the Wizards. But I get it at the end of the day. Going back to the West, the Nuggets. Woo! Bull. I don't know if he's going to play, but I like the Nuggets, man. I like them. Like, they, especially with Michael Porter Jr. and, you know, they got a lot of guys, Torrey Craig, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray. They're so young, but they're so talented. And Yusuf Nurkic, obviously, he slimmed down. Plumlee's a tough center. The Nuggets are nice, man, but can they get over that hump? Can they face up with the Clippers and the Lakers? I don't know. I think they have a better chance going against the Lakers, and that's just because I think their guard play, you know, with Barton and Harris and Murray, I think they might give the Lakers trouble with no Avery Bradley. But again, Danny Green and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, they're going to have to do a lot of defending during this bubble that I didn't think they would have to do. Obviously, those guys are huge attributes to the Lakers, but with Avery Bradley there, man, it's just different. Like, Danny Green, he guards twos. He guards threes. Same with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Now you're telling those guys to guard PGs. Like, it's different. It's different. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I like the Nuggets. And the Nuggets, if a third team could come out of the West, it would be the Nuggets, which they're at the third seed right now. Utah. Now, Utah's interesting because on paper, they're tough. They're really tough, but can Donovan Mitchell be that guy? I don't know. I don't know if Donovan Mitchell could be your best player, which I think that if any team could lose in the first round, I would pick Utah, man, especially with how things went with Gobert and Mitchell when COVID first started in sports. And I still don't know if they rekindled everything. You could say you can, but when shit hits the fan, have you? We'll see. I don't know. But Utah, I really don't know about them. They look good on paper, but I can't see them, you know, moving past the first round. If they were to have a first-round matchup right now, it would be with the Thunder, who I'm very high on. I am very high on them. Chris Paul, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Dennis Schroeder is sixth man of the year contender. Like, they're good. They're really, really good. Andre Robinson coming back. Like, he's a really good 3-and-D guy. Again, I don't know how much he's going to play, but, you know, you got a lot of rangy guys who could defend and, you know, who are kind of around the same height, around that 6'7" long arm area. And I think they're going to be a tough out. If the playoffs started today and OKC played the Jazz, I would take OKC in six. I would. I don't think they would have an answer for Chris Paul. And Mike Conley has a lot to do with the Jazz. If Mike Conley, he's the X factor. If Mike Conley hoops and really hoops like what we've seen Mike Conley play like throughout his career, then the Jazz should be able to get past that round. But I don't know that. I don't know that. Mike Conley, I was real high on them before the season started, and he was really inconsistent this year, given he was injured. But I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But he's definitely the X factor for the Jazz. Another team I'm really high on, the Houston Rockets. And this is how I'm going to close. Obviously, before I get to the Rockets, but the Mavericks, they're tough, obviously, too. Luka and Porzingis. I just watched the Mavericks for Luka. But in conclusion, the Rockets. James Harden has never, ever, ever been this healthy and this well-rested going into the playoffs. The knock on James Harden has always been the fact that he's been exhausted, he's been burnt out, he's carried the Rockets on his shoulders with his stats, and people have hated him for it. People have really hated on him, and he hates it. He can't stand it. He thinks that, you know, when it's all said and done and he's retired, people are really gonna cherish his game instead of taking it for granted as they do now. And I feel James. Like, James is one of the greatest offensive players we've ever seen. And I think James, this is probably the biggest chance that James can prove it. Now, do I agree with the asterisk at the end of the NBA championship? You know, when it's all said and done for the bubble? Kinda, but do we put an asterisk to the 99 Spurs? Now, those Spurs teams, if the Spurs only won one championship, I think we probably would. I think we would give the Spurs a lot more shit for that. But the fact that they've won five, we just count it as a part of the five. And we think that, oh, yeah, they're supposed to win. Like, it's the Spurs, obviously, like, you know, it can't be an asterisk because it's the Spurs. So will it be different in the bubble? And I'm not saying the Rockets have a chance to win the whole thing. I am not saying that. But I am saying that James Harden can right his wrongs in this bubble more than a lot of players can. And that's it, man. You know, I appreciate y'all for this part one of the bubble edition of The Right Call with Zay Collier. You can find me on Twitter at @ain'tthat_Zay. You can find your boy Instagram at The Right Call with Zay Collier. You can find it at Apple, Spotify. We're coming to Google very soon. I need to get on that because it's quarantine. I'll definitely get on that. But we got big news coming August. I will talk about it in August, but yeah, I'm very excited where I am. I appreciate the horn and all my resources and my program director, Aaron Hogan, assistant program director, Trey Allen. The fact that I'm doing, you know, Bucky and Aaron now, Thursdays and Fridays, it's been great. Wagner Wire, shout out to my man Adam Wags, you know, it's been great. I've been having a ball with sports coming back. I'm very excited to get y'all back to this Right Call type game. Zay Collier. Appreciate it, everybody. Y'all stay safe. Wash your hands. Mask up. Holla.